lots of questions. I want to say, Dave, one of the things you mentioned, and a lot of you will see it, is that every agency is going to more user and user fees. I mean, you're going to see all your fees for launching boats on state parks and the campgrounds, everything you use is going up. As you know in your business, Dave, you guys have seen it going up. Everything, every agency is going to user fees. And that gets beyond our control to do that. So you're going to see it. Boy, there's so much of this. We could schedule this for 7 hours and we'd still be here. So I'm going to start right here with Vince. I'm going to ask these guys to go take a seat, take a break. And as soon as we get through some of these questions, we're going to get Dwayne and Daniel up here to do their presentation. We'll start right here with Vince.
Thank you. It's always seemed like a simple math problem the way I understood it. A few years ago, they were saying, if you pay the 82 statutory formula PFD for a few years, great, we'll get some big fat checks, $3,000 a year for a couple years. And then because we will have drained everything down, it could eliminate, probably would eliminate the PFD program entirely. So take $3,000 for 3 years, you get $9,000. Or if you were to do the what's been talked about, which is the average size, if you had the $1,100 started out, that would go on indefinitely because it would allow for the permanent fund to build. We'd still be able to draw on the formula. So you want $9,000 over 3 years, or let's say over 20 years, it's $1,100. You're talking about $10,000-$12,000 more than you would get otherwise, and being able to continue it into perpetuity, which is more important to me for my grandkids, that they'd have it down the road instead of us eliminating the whole program. The other part on the spending, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, you've said that over time, like 20 in 82 or whatever it was, to $4.5 billion was the general fund budget on all the agencies spent on about 400,000 people. Now we have the same amount of money being spent on 700,000 people and trying to provide services for nearly twice the amount of people with the same amount of money we were spending 30, 40 years ago. Is that the accurate read? So at some point, in order to keep up with inflation and the service, so we're losing services every single year. They're getting worse and worse and worse if we don't ever keep up with inflation with population. Exactly. Right. Anyway, those are the two points that stood out the most to me.
Dave, did you have something? Is there any kind of statistics on Alaska's gross domestic product, along with the amount of state spending that goes on, say, if it's 5%, 10%, 20%, I'm just wondering.
So Alaska's GDP is built around federal spending. It's built around oil revenue, oil industry sort of expenditures, and then the third rail would be state spending. It's interesting, Neil talked about budget cuts earlier, and I think if you were to talk to anybody from the Institute of Social and Economic Research, from UAA or Northern Economics, or anybody who's done analysis, we still haven't quite figured out what the cuts from last year have done in terms of sort of matriculating their way through the economy. But there's been some indications. It's real interesting. Alaska's lost population for 6 years in a row now. Actually a net loss in the last 3 years. We've shrunk, our population beginning to shrink. But something that's really caught my eyes in the last 6 years, we're losing younger people in the state, people who are professionals, engineers, teachers, university professors, productive members of our state, that really has gotten me a little bit concerned. So when I look at the GDP numbers, to me, they're numbers, and if you look at 1 year to the next, this last year, I think that there's a little bit of an uptick in terms of overall GDP activity. But when you look at the longer term impacts of the decisions we're tasked with making in Juneau now, that's the thing that I'm keeping an eye on.
Thank you for that. I'm going to go to George and Tyson. George.
Yes, in listening, all the taxes that you want is taxes on the people. I haven't heard nobody say, how about getting rid of some of the incentives and raising the taxes on our resources. That's what we have them for, to develop. But we're not getting them developed. We're giving too many incentives away. And on the ferry system, it's not just people's survival, but Alaska's logging companies and fish industry is going to lose money. That's lost revenue right there, folks. We need to address oil taxes, quit giving away corporate taxes in the name of economic development. We want jobs, Alaska jobs, and revenue for Alaska in exchange for a package of state and local incentives and in writing to guarantee Alaskans first. We need an income tax. There's too many out-of-towners coming up here getting all the money and going home without paying no taxes. We need a head tax on the people that are working here. We moved our 18th billionth barrel of oil and we're broke. You got to fix SB21, people. House Bill 244. That is a good start. It's a bill that guarantees that the grants being paid to nonprofits, 80% actually go to the project, and we need a performance audit on these nonprofits. That's a good thing to start on, starting there somewhere. And it's not the state's job to prop up nonprofits. Of course, we're broke. You should think more revenue should come from the Alaskans. I think it should come from corporations and special interests, not Alaskans. And I hope you go with the voter initiative. Thank you. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you, George. And we don't think it should come from Alaskans. I mean, not any more than we have to.
First off, thanks for coming. I know you guys are really busy, and it's a weekend, and you had to fly in and out. If we could, on the second to last slide on there, that one. My question is when you get to those second two scenarios to the right, one of the options I know being talked about is using our savings for that, and I was just wondering if it's been figured out at what the additional loss would be. Because I know on the far one, if we used it and we took the whole $1.5 billion out, you know, I'm assuming it's invested and there's a loss on the investment as well. And I was wondering if that had been looked at on what the additional cost, not just the cost of what we're taking out, but the additional cost for future revenues.
Boy, that's a great question.
The permanent fund, which is the you've got the corpus, and then you've also got the earnings reserve. Those are invested more aggressively. The CBR, checking account, just like anybody else's checking account, that's invested at a lower rate. So the opportunity cost of losing out on the CBR money, which is we only have $2 billion left on that, it would be smaller than if we start going into the ERA. That's right now the projection is you're making 7% per year on that one. And so I don't know if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, so the CBR earns it's like a money market fund, 2-3%, so it's a nominal amount that it earns every year. What, you know, I'm going to speak for myself here, but when I look at the long term in terms of growing the permanent fund to where I think it needs to get to, and hopefully even bigger than that over time, I have to keep in mind, just as I do with my own individual savings accounts, that we're going to have years like this, you know. And if you overdraw, and this is, if you overdraw $815 million plus another $1 billion or whatever the numbers are this year, we hit those down years going forward, then the compounding impact could be immeasurable at this point. So we have to look at the long term and kind of factor all these things in. I can tell you the permanent fund trustees were in Juneau just this last week. They're talking about the scenario. I haven't seen the exact numbers. They'd have to be, you know, sort of modeling and projections and things like that. But I know as decision makers down in Juneau, we've all at some point or another thought through all of this. And again, keeping the longer term view on things I think where the legislature is probably going to end up going.
Okay, I've got to get to Peggy here. She's been on hold way long enough.
Thank you for being here. And from the school district perspective, thank you for you did last year, because we're in a way different position this year than we were a year ago right now for our district. What I do want to ask you to consider is a figuring out a way to forward fund education again. I want to tell you that what you did last year for us this year was huge. We have a stability and a confidence in planning our budget right now that we didn't have, nor have we had for other years. And in fact, next month we'll be able to offer non-tenured teacher contracts for the first time in years. What that does is helps with the retention of our teaching staff. And that is so important. We know recruitment and retention is really important right now. And on the Kenai, we lost a lot of really good educators over the past few years. So even though forward funding is a cut, it is really important. So please, if you can figure out a way going forward to continue to forward fund even across legislatures.
Sure.
Okay. Oh, great. So we did include forward funding in our budget last year, and it was vetoed, of course, and it's not something that the governor supports, and he's it's gone into the courts, of course, and it's something that he can continue to veto. The thing that we're looking at, and just for those of you who are not familiar with what forward funding means, right now we are currently working on the FY21 budget, the fiscal year 21 budget. It starts this July 1 and it goes till next June 30 of 2021. So that's the fiscal year 21 budget. So what forward funding would mean is we would not fund just this year's budget, but we would fund for education the following year's budget. And the purpose for that is the schools need to know what their budgets are. They need to plan that out, because if they don't have fiscal stability, then they're required to send out pink slips. And I'm guessing for the schools around here, it's mid-May, like most places. I think I'm getting a yes. And so, for example, if we don't pass a budget until June, for example, and last year we were in session until July, then that there's no fiscal stability. You have to lay off teachers, and they get the pink slips, and then they go looking for jobs, and then we pass a budget in June, and oh, it looks like they've got enough money, but it's hard to get those teachers to come back. It just creates a lot of problems. So if we don't forward fund right now for the following year, one of the things that we are looking at is not just forward funding, but early funding. And early funding would be, let's not pass the budget this year in June. Let's pass it in before the pink slip deadline, and let's pass it in March or April at the latest. And right now, I was instructed by our group to push for the 90-day session, get our budget out. We're on track right now from the House perspective. If we get the budget out here in the next 12 days or something, early March, March 4, I believe it is, we'll have that budget out on day 45, and then we'll be on track for a 90-day session. I think I've got really good support from our group to push that bill here in the next week or 10 days. And so I think it's something that has a very, or at least I feel like has a good possibility of happening. So.
Thank you for being here. A few years back, most of you know my background, we looked at the tax structure on a particular industry that had an allocation, in this case of fish, and that marginal tax rate was around 12%. So that includes both state, some federal receipts, but it also talked about borough and sales tax and things like that. And that was during a time when some legislators were talking about this particular industry not paying its way. So I'd like to have you keep that in mind. So we have a marginal tax rate of around 12%. Then you have a particular regulatory agency that makes a decision that transfers those resources to another sector. And we also looked at that. So there was a net loss with that particular decision, not only to the state treasury, but to our local governments, particularly the raw fish tax, where half of it comes back into our local communities. In the past, where that has been $1 million plus, we're now looking at something in the range of $500,000-$600,000. And But there's never been any consideration by these regulatory bodies as to what is the effect on taxes and revenue when those decisions are made. And in the particular one that just went on, in their own regulations, it says that if you create a particular allocation, you have to do an economic analysis. They've never done one. And so we're continually taking from an industry that's paying, let's say, 12% into an industry that's paying something quite less. And that impacts all of us. And thank you for being here. And just as a philosophical thing, I'm glad you can think of 50, $60 billion figures. No, I just, I have a hard time getting there. But in the end, it's us. It's us.
Thank you, Roland. Okay, I've got to go to David Brighton. Are you still here? And then we're going to wrap this up. I need to get these other folks up here.
Yeah, I think everybody can hear me. I'm pretty good. Hey, if you guys only make it 8% on your money, you need to get yourself a new set of brokerage houses. I manage my own, and I'm beating 8% for the last 4 years, and I'm the most conservative person in this room because it's my money, and I can't make any more money. I'm getting too damned old, and I'm so conservative, it's unbelievable. I've got friends that's younger on the slope right now that's made over 20% a year for the last 3 years and 10% for years before that, and you guys can only make 8%.
Fred, we didn't say we were making 8%. We said we're budgeting, we're marketing for 8%. We're doing considerably better than 8%, but that is a conservative estimate that we're shooting for. So I'm going to go to Mr. Brighton here.
Fred, that point is well taken. Let me just quickly point this out, that when the permanent fund was started, it was initially managed like a money market fund in bonds and things that were low risk, low return rate. Over the years, the fund has gotten more aggressive with its portfolio. The last couple of years, it's earned 12, 13, 14% and so forth. But if you average it out over all time, it's a much lower number. But you're absolutely right. It's not 8% in the present.
It's a permanent fund corporation, and all public monies are managed at a much more conservative level than an individual type. So go ahead, Mr. President.
I'd like to begin by thanking you for being here and presenting all this information. I would encourage you to take the long-term in account as we move forward. I think Alaskans can live with a smaller PFD that's going to be a long-term solution that we can maintain. It also maintains our government services. Speaking on behalf of the educators, BSA hasn't increased in about 4 years now. We appreciate the one-time funding that came last year and is in place this year. We're not likely to get that one-time funding in FY21, which means for this local district, we're going to lose $2 million in our budget. The school district is working on that, trying to maintain services. But in the long term, we're getting beaten up by inflation. So thank you for bringing the information. I would encourage you to be conservative. As far as the PFD goes, I think that smaller amounts for a long term are the best way for us to have a great future for Alaska.
Thanks for that, Dave. Thank you guys for all attending, and I'm going to apologize that I didn't. I wish we had more time. I don't, but I did promise two gentlemen over here, so I'm going to ask Mr. Lynch and Mr. Bannock, come on up to the table, please, and get started with the presentation.
I'm just going to give you one little bit of information. Twice within probably about the last 6 weeks, I've gone to two different conferences with young people, young voters, probably anywhere people from, I would say, 18 to 40. And there was probably a total of 250 people altogether. And I asked them, how many people would rather have a more moderately priced PFD and maintain your state services? Every hand in the room except one went up. Just FYI.
Okay, thank you for that. Bryce, Neil, thank you guys so much for being here. Help me out with this presentation. Glad to have it. Mr. Lynch, Mr. Bannock, whenever you're ready, let the folks know what you're talking about. And if you gentlemen would feel more comfortable, the mics at the table are working, you're welcome to take a chair and talk to the group, whatever your preference is. So.
Test. Thanks for your visit and thanks for the opportunity. We'd like to float a non-painful, non-objectionable idea for revenue enhancement for the state, not the AML. We would propose the state of Alaska enact a sales tax on internet sales only. Since the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on South Dakota Wayfair, 20 other states are already happening at the state level. We have an established state-established gas, tire, cannabis, liquor, tobacco, etc. tax. Why is it needed? The online sellers, Amazon, eBay, Alibaba, etc., need our state-financed airports, the large ones, down to every gravel strip with a grader, our ferry systems, our roads and bridges, our DOT plows, and our troopers to get their products to our driveways. All state-financed resource with no contribution to the cost of such. 4 years ago, Bloomberg Financial estimated the state of Alaska left a quarter to a half billion dollars on the table from not taxing internet sales. Here's how and the benefit.
As you are likely aware, there is a proposal from the Alaska Municipal League in conjunction with a Colorado firm that would collect sales tax on behalf of select local governments, local government sales from internet sales. Regardless of any potential benefits from the Alaska Municipal League plan, these facts remain. Only approximately one-third of the state is participating. As such, the $1 million threshold, as called out in the Wayfair decision, will be harder to meet. Most importantly, this plan does nothing for the state of Alaska's fiscal concerns. Fortunately, our plan today removes the need for the high-cost AML plan, yet continues to respect the local government's taxation and revenue authority. Our proposal can be readily set up today with very little new state bureaucracy. It is the responsibility of the online seller to collect sales tax and remit. The state simply receives a check. And even today, we have two examples of the state of Alaska collecting and remitting. One, the motor vehicle registration tax through the Division of Motor Vehicles, and two, the real property tax on oil and gas facilities. In areas that have adopted a local sales tax, the state would redistribute based on the zip code, or more specifically, the zip plus 4 code. Using an 8% overlay sales tax example on internet purchases, this is what would happen for the following districts. For Representative Knopp and District 30, here in the city of Soldotna, inside the Kenai Peninsula Borough, the 8 cents collected by the state, 6 cents would be returned to the borough. Of that 6 cents, 3 cents would be returned to the city of Soldotna, leaving the state of Alaska 2 cents. In Ms. Stute's district, in Kodiak, of the 8 cents collected, the state would have 7 cents returned to Kodiak, leaving 1 cent for the state. Mr. Speaker, in your community, the state would collect the same 8 cents, 6 cents would be returned, leaving 2 cents for the state. And Mr. Foster, in your community, of the 8 cents collected, between 5 and 7 cents would be returned, leaving the balance to the state. This plan respects local government's revenue streams and even their very own specific and local exemption programs. In areas without a sales tax, the entire 8% would be collected and held by the state of Alaska and could be returned in a measured fashion in a new revenue sharing plan. Some brief points to consider. An online sales tax is voluntary. No citizens are being punished. Citizens may continue to shop, purchase tires, toys, clothes, even daily groceries. Take advantage of free shipping offers and even large discounts offered only on the internet. Or my own personal favorite, shop and buy local.
And the urgency is online sales grow every year. Every generation is being trained to scroll and press send, whether it's in Anchorage or the Village. You look 10, 15 years down the road, half the brick and mortars will be closed. That's jobs lost. The smoothness of this, who would fight this idea? The oil and gas industry? No. Online sellers? No. Anti-income tax lobbyists? Anti-worker payroll lobbyists? Anti-full state sales tax? No. You start out with representative, insert your name. After it, it says lawmaker. 20 other states are doing it and it's growing. My last suggestion is pull David Teal out of retirement to work the numbers. You fine tune it, pull the trigger.
In closing, Daniel and I would like to say thank you for visiting our community and for hearing our idea. We are available at your request to present, follow up, answer your questions at the timing and location of your choosing. Thank you again.
Thank you. I got an idea for the permanent fund too, but we don't have time.
But maybe we could get you two gentlemen to submit that to us in writing, if you would, please. Your testimony. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. I got to meet with a couple gentlemen here. I'm going to ask Neil and Louise and Bryce to answer questions, mingle with you guys. But we're going to put the mics away at this point and just let you guys visit. And please eat up them donuts, drink that coffee for us. So thank you.